Welcome to the Pure Bliss Show with Mema Carmo. This is where we'll inspire you to transcend, transform, make magic, live your soul purpose, and be the unicorn that you truly are. Live in pure bliss.
Hi, everyone. This is Mema Carmo here on the Pure Bliss podcast. I am so excited. Today is my very first podcast. And what's even more amazing and wonderful is that I get to share it with my friend, my dear friend, Bruce Van Horn. Bruce, welcome to the Pure Bliss first ever podcast.
I'm so excited for you and to be your first guest. This is going to be amazing.
I know you're so special. And now you're more special.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah. So, Bruce, I am so happy to be one of your real friends, not just your Twitter follower friends, which I was about a year ago.
Yeah.
And I'm glad I Twitter stalked you and made you talk to me. And now we're friends in real life. I'm happy about that. So Bruce, I want people to know about you and how amazing you are. Why don't we just dive in and tell me how Bruce Van Horn became Bruce Van Horn?
I think mostly just because I love chocolate. Shouldn't everything just start with the confession of I love chocolate? Hi, my name is Bruce Van Horn and I like chocolate.
And do you like it with wine or just by itself?
Of course.
Yeah. Or a nice cognac?
Yeah, anything. Yeah, the wine and the cognac are great too. And we're having that, we can set the chocolate aside. But, you know, it's my life has been a journey, that's for sure. And certainly the last 5 years of my life have been really exciting. About 10 years ago, I made a major shift from the person who I was to the person I am now. And I guess where we start is where I am now. And if you want to back up and have me go back to who I used to be, or more specifically, what I used to be and the way I used to think and perceive the world, which is very, very different than I see it now. So as you said, I'm a writer, I'm a speaker. I also do a podcast called Life is a Marathon. I have almost 500,000 Twitter followers, which is absolutely amazing to understand why so many people all around the world want to hang out and see tweets every day from this middle-aged white guy who sort of sounds like Mr. Rogers, is what people tell me on my podcast. But my goal in life is to inspire and empower people to come the fullest expression of who they were created to be. And it's largely because that's what I had to do with my life. I found that I was living my life in reaction mode. Things were happening really faster than I could keep up with. Most of them were negative things. I was in negative relationships. I had a very, very negative self-image. And I was just going through the motions of life without any real intention to enjoy my life. I'd sort of given up on the fact that I would ever enjoy life just because so many difficult things, so frankly, tragedies had happened to me. I went through that change and my life shifted in radical ways. I got into the life coaching business, not because I set out to be a life coach, but because somebody actually asked me. This guy, we were fellow soccer field dads. His son played on the same field as my son, and we weren't beyond first name basis, but he just said, hey, there's something different about you this year. Tell me what it is. And so I started telling him my story, and he said, whatever it is you've got, I want that in my life. I want to hire you to be my life coach. I didn't even know what that meant. I had never even heard the term before. But that really started me moving in the direction that I am now. So I've written a couple books, and I regularly put out tweets to encourage and motivate people. My blog is very popular. And then I started my podcast a little over 2 years ago. And as you are about to discover, my dear, the podcast has been one of the most rewarding things that I've ever done in my life. I get a lot of favorable letters and emails and things about my books and stuff like that. But the feedback that I get through the podcast has just been so profoundly amazing and humbling and heartwarming, the way the human voice can touch another person's life like the written word can't. And so you're going to experience that. And because I know your voice and I adore your voice and everything that you stand for, I know that you are embarking on an amazing adventure with this new podcast of yours. So that's
the
background of where I am and what I've come through. The other piece of it,
there's something, because you said that, you know, you were on the soccer field and you met somebody, you know, another parent, and something about you had changed. So what was the catalyst between who you were before and whatever made you become the person he saw that was different to him? What happened?
And so we had known each other for probably 5 or 6 years, again, just on a, hey, how's it going basis. And he specifically said, you know, Bruce, you know, there's just something different. The way you move, I mean, physically move your body is different. You have an energy, a happiness. The way you talk to your son and the other kids is just very, very different. I used to be a very angry person. I used to be surly, grumpy, pessimistic, cynical, sarcastic, whatever adjectives we want to come up with. The few friends that I actually had left, they likened me to Eeyore from Winnie the Pooh. You know, I was just a sulky, grumpy, nothing in life is going to go well. So there's no point in getting excited about anything. And if anything does go well, we certainly don't celebrate it because it won't last very long.
Mm.
So I found myself at 42 years old. I had two boys, was married still at that time, but my boys were 6 years old and, no, excuse me, they were 8 years old and 2 years old at the time. And I didn't even like being a dad. I hated everything about my life. I had filed bankruptcy for the second time. I filed bankruptcy when I was 27 years old through a failed business. And then I really struggled to get back on my feet, both financially and from a self-esteem point of view. That was a huge blow to my ego, which now understand that I needed a big blow to my ego. And then I was in a very difficult marriage for a lot of different reasons. My wife suffered from mental illness issues, and I had just relationship expectation issues. I was one of these persons who was constantly looking for other people to validate me. You know, so I was also the classic overachiever. I tried to do really well at my job. I tried to do really well at school. I tried to be the best, you know, when I was out on the soccer field with the kids, I tried to be the best soccer coach. But deep down inside, it wasn't because I loved doing those things. It's because I desperately wanted the approval of everybody. I wanted people telling me how awesome I was, because I deep down inside didn't believe it myself. So I had a super low self-esteem. And so I was asking things from my wife and in the marriage that just weren't fair. You know, I was asking her to give to me things that she couldn't give or that I needed to give to myself. So there were those issues. In the year 2000, we tragically lost a daughter. So my daughter died 16 years ago. That was a pain that I don't wish on anybody. And even now, I process it in a very different way, that having had experienced that is one of the best things that has ever happened to me, because it's helped change me into the person that I am now. But during that time, I certainly did not think it that way. And so even now, just the passion of that 16 years later still brings me to tears. Then because of all of the medical debt that we incurred trying to keep her alive, I just couldn't dig out from underneath that. Our 20% of the 80-20% that most insurance covers was still in the neighborhood of $400,000. And I just couldn't, you know, based on, first of all, I wasn't in any real emotional shape to do much in the way of making money. So I wound up filing bankruptcy again. So the short story is that, if that was a short story, see, this is where you jump in as the podcast host and say, wait a minute, Bruce, stop. But at 42 years old, I was looking at bridge overpasses, seriously trying to figure out if any given overpass was high enough to do the job, and
how
could I get there without attracting too much attention. I did not have any hope for my life. When a person doesn't have any hope for the future. We are, Mema, we are hope-shaped creatures. And having been there, I have had many friends commit suicide. And I can understand that when you see no possibility of your life ever getting any better than what it is right now, it's not a question of why would you commit suicide. It's a question of why would you not?
Right.
And that's where I was. And I had a weird experience. And, you know, a lot of times it might be through a suicide prevention counselor or somebody like that who recognizes that. Mm-hmm. God showed up in my life in a really weird way, in the form of my older brother, who came to Richmond that November of 2006, 10 years ago, to run the Richmond Marathon. And when he was done, he said, Bruce, you should do this.
So when this conversation happened, you were still in the midst of your depression? You were still going through that process?
Oh, absolutely. Yep, absolutely. And part of it also was that I just wasn't brave enough to do it. First of all, I was afraid I'd blow that too, because I, you know, hadn't been successful in any other area of my life. What would make me think I'd be successful at even taking my life? Nevertheless, my brother came to Richmond to run the Richmond Marathon. I live in Richmond, Virginia. Mm-hmm. And after the race was over, we were sitting at the dinner table and he said the most absurd thing I had ever heard in my life. And he said, Bruce, you should do this. I said, I should do what? He said, I should run marathons.
Now, had you run before? Were you a runner by any?
No. Well, I ran cross country when I was in high school, and I hated it so much. The day I graduated from high school, I threw my running shoes away and never exercised since then. So from the time I was like 19 years old to now 42, I had not run at all. But I did recognize the fact that I was woefully out of shape. I wasn't terribly out of
shape. I love that word, woefully. Woefully. It sounds so intense.
Oh, it was, because I think one of the reasons I didn't even like being a dad was because I was so out of shape. You know, I couldn't keep up with my kids playing in the yard or riding bikes for more than 15 minutes before, wait a minute, let daddy catch his breath.
So what he was asking you to do metaphorically was something not just physically a leap for you, but also emotionally and physically a leap for you.
Absolutely.
You had been in this bad place. You had been, you know, kind of just walking through life and you were kind of asleep. And probably like walking dead, right?
Absolutely.
And he's asking you, you hadn't run for how many years? Like 20 years, 25?
Yeah.
And now he's asking you to run not just a 5K, but a freaking marathon.
Uh-huh. Yeah, I thought it was.
I like your brother.
Yeah, it was the most absurd thing I had ever heard.
Exactly.
And, you know, like you, Mema, but, you know, we live in communities often where, I mean, goodness, there's a Walmart 3 miles from my house. Seriously, do you need anything that Walmart doesn't sell? Probably not.
No.
You know, so, you know, so I said to him, I said, you know what? Everything I need in life is a 5-minute drive from my house.
Yeah.
Most of everything I want is
why would you want to run anywhere?
Right. So I said, I don't even like to drive 20 miles unless I'm going on vacation.
Right.
You know, I worked at home. So, but he said something that later would actually change my life. And he said, Bruce, the hardest part about running a marathon is making the decision to do it. I didn't believe him because I was pretty sure the hardest part about running a marathon would be what?
Running the damn marathon.
Running part.
So right. let me just stop you right there. That's a powerful statement. The hardest part in running the marathon was deciding to do it.
Making the decision to do it.
Exactly. So I think that's so important because a lot of people struggle in life with different things.
Yeah.
And because they're afraid, because they're anxious, because they feel inadequate, they let that stymie them. But if they kind of just took the first leap of faith or took that first step, because that first step can move you through so many different fears.
Right.
Right. So deciding is the biggest thing. So this is a key point I want people who are listening to take with them is deciding, making up your mind, and then acting on it.
Yeah, exactly. And so I'll catch up to where really the big event happened in my life. Actually, the date that I gave you was wrong. The date he and I had that conversation was in November of 2005. And so what happened for me was I didn't have any intention of running a marathon. I did I did at least make up my mind that if my older brother can run marathons, I can at least join a gym and get in a little bit better shape. So I joined the neighborhood gym. I started walking on a treadmill. And I eventually had the goal of being able to jog 1 mile without walking. And my goodness, I didn't think I'd ever get there.
One mile?
1 mile, Mama.
Are you serious right now?
I'm serious. 1 mile,
Bruce,
was my goal for just jogging. And that's using it really loosely.
I'm ashamed.
I know, right? But I got to that point where after about a month of going 3 or 4 days a week to the gym to just walk briskly on a treadmill because it was cold, and I'm not walking outside when it's cold. It's winter in Virginia.
Yeah, who does that?
Right. So when I hit that mark, though, when I was able to actually jog 1 mile without walking, something in me snapped or switched or turned on or came alive, actually. So it was actually the very next week, I was able to go 2 miles without jogging. And then I learned more about people who were running. I got connected through the gym with, you know, more of a running community. There was a neighborhood 5K. And so I signed up for the 5K. And I wasn't able to run the whole 5K without walking, but it was fun. And I was actually doing something for the very first time in eons just for myself. See, I had put the needs of everybody above the needs of taking care of Bruce.
Right.
I felt really guilty about it. And when I started doing things like that, I had conditioned people that Bruce doesn't have a life outside of himself. Bruce will always say yes to anybody who asks for help. So when I started saying, no, I'm going to the gym, I got pushback from my wife and my kids because they weren't used to Bruce doing something just for himself. So I actually felt really guilty and selfish about it, but I was having fun and I was doing it. And then another month or so later, I ran a neighborhood 10K and it just felt good. And after running the 10K, I said, you know what? I'm going to do it. I'm going to train for a marathon and I'm going to run when my brother comes back in November of now it's 2006. I'm going to run marathon with him in November. So I started training for a marathon. And Mama, here's what
That's happened. Amazing.
Here's what happened. When I started training, it was hard. I laced up my shoes every single day and I got out. It's warmer now. It's spring in Virginia. So I'm out on the streets running through the neighborhoods. It's pretty. I'm doing it really early in the morning and I'm really starting to enjoy this. And when you're training for a marathon, you get to where you're doing some really long training runs. And it's now August of 2006. I don't remember the exact date because I wasn't journaling back then and paying attention to things like this. But it was early on a Saturday morning in August of 2006. In my mind, Mama, I was already a marathon runner. I hadn't yet run the marathon. In my mind, I already identified myself as a marathon runner.
So when you began the marathon training process, what changed within you as a result of pushing yourself to kind of go further?
Yeah. And that's what happened this Saturday morning was I came to an awareness. You know, we can use the word epiphany. Basically having a vision from God or this moment of instant clarity, this understanding of what was going on inside me, because I didn't know, I didn't have a vocabulary for it right then. But what happened that morning was, well, first of all, I really got, because I had success at it and I was getting great pleasure, just selfish pleasure out of running and doing something just for me. However, I was still really angry and upset and unhappy with every single other area of my life. So if that morning, I went out for an 18-mile training run.
18 miles?
18.
And did you enjoy these things? I mean, I did.
You did?
Bruce, you're a
you and I are
very strange person. I'm not doing a marathon. No.
Yes, we are. We're going
to
run a
marathon. Hell to the no.
Yeah,
how about that?
Yeah, we can do it. We can do it. Anyway, so I got up early that morning and I had this course that I liked to do where I would run west really early in the morning in the dark. And I knew that when I turned around, the sun would have been coming up behind me. So I'd be running back into the beautiful sunrise. And I turned around, I got about a mile into it, and I'm looking at the sunrise, and there's no traffic, so don't worry about when I say I literally came to a screeching halt, stopped right in the middle of the street, and had this, oh my God, moment. I had this moment of instant clarity. And if you had asked me early that morning while I was lacing up my shoes, because I still had a big chip on my shoulder, I was still angry at the world.
Yeah.
Angry at God, you know, because I was really trying to be a good person. I was trying to be a good husband, a good father, a good business owner. In my mind, I thought I was doing everything right. So I was angry at everybody. And if you had said, Bruce, what's your problem? I would have, without any hesitation, Mama, been able to rattle off for you a long list of exactly what my problems were.
Right.
And I would have been able to give you an equally long and corresponding list of who or what was to blame all of my problems. Guess who is not on that list?
What, yourself?
Bruce Van Horn was nowhere to be found on that list. I was in total victim mode. I was everything, you know, I could point fingers at everybody, you know, going back to when I was in my 20s and this guy who talked me into starting my own business. It was his fault I filed bankruptcy the first time. So I was pointing fingers everywhere. And what happened to me that morning was I had this awareness because I was a marathon runner. I mean, I stopped and I looked at my body. I'm no longer overweight. I am not out of shape at all. Had the marathon been the next week, I was convinced I could run 26 miles without any big problem.
Did you have a six-pack, Bruce?
I kind of had a six-pack, maybe a little bit. Not really, but I was in great shape. And I had totally transformed my body from something being overweight and out of shape into a fit, firm marathon runner. And it occurred to me that my brother was right, but I had misunderstood him the first time. When he said the hardest part about running a marathon is making the decision to do it, what I misunderstood was that I thought he was talking about a decision you make once. What I discovered, though, was that in order to become the marathon runner I thought that I was right then, it was a decision I had to make every single day.
I love that. You know, so every let me just, day. That's beautiful because a lot of people, and that ties into the podcast name, Pure Bliss, right. Too, because people think that being happy is something that you get to a state of happiness and that's it. Yeah. You have to choose every day to make decisions and to take actions that help you to become who you're meant to be in that moment. So that's really powerful.
Yeah. And what occurred to me was that the only reason I was able to become the marathon runner was because I had to assume 100% responsibility for my becoming that person.
Yep.
You can't outsource marathon training, Mama.
Right, exactly.
That's not a culture in India. Right?
Yeah. Right.
I can hire the kid down the street to cut my grass, but not get up every morning and train for me. I had to do it myself. I had to, and if I succeeded, it was because I did it. If I failed, it was because it was all on me. I had nobody to blame.
But you.
So the epiphany for me, which led to the huge changes, was that I realized I only had one problem. I didn't have that long list of problems, and I didn't have that long list of people who were to blame. I only had one problem, and there was only one person to blame. I had a thinking problem. I had a Bruce problem. And if I could claim 100% responsibility for the person that I was, then I could also claim 100% responsibility for changing who I was if I wasn't happy. And so I started applying that principle to every other area of my life. I didn't want to be the cynical person anymore. I wanted to be a sincere encourager.
Mm-hmm.
And so I started training my mind to think that way. Now that is easier said than done, but just like I had for the marathon, see, that was August. The marathon wasn't going to be until November of 2006. But I had crystal clear vision of me crossing that finish line in November. I could see myself doing it. I could feel right then what it was going to feel like when I actually did it. And that was really the big change, was having finally, see, we're, one of the things that I write about and speak about is the fact that we are hope-shaped creatures. And if we have a hope for the future that is encouraging, that is exciting, if we see good things happening to us at some point, then we can go through the difficulty now. Our endurance is directly proportional to the clarity of our vision. And just as I could crystal clear see myself crossing the finish line as if it had already happened, I was able to get up every morning and do the training. As I saw myself being a more successful person, a loving parent, more successful in the business world, as I got back into my love of writing, I started writing again and had a clear passion for who I wanted to become, then every single day made sense. Getting up and doing the work, writing in my blog or writing in my journal made sense now, because it was moving me one step at a time closer to the person that I wanted to become and to
right.
the life that I wanted.
So Bruce, in this short time, you've hit on so many powerful things that I want people to kind of take with them when they leave this podcast. The first thing you said is people have to decide to change, decide to wake up, decide to live your life every day. Yes. Whatever you do, you have to decide. And then once you do that, then the next step is acting. You have to move forward.
Action.
You know? Exactly. Yeah. And then you have to choose over and over again every day mm-hmm. to make the decision to become, to shift, to transform.
Right. And in order to do that, you have to have a big why. You know, why do you want to do this? You know, it's one thing to say, I want $1 million in the bank and to get up every single day and start working really hard. But if you don't know at a deep soul level what you would do with $1 million, why, how would it change your life? How would you very specifically change the lives of other people? Then the doing of the thing every day is still going to be drudgery and you'll probably stop.
Right. So Bruce, so you mentioned changing your thinking, having a vision for who you want to become, and then knowing your why. What is your passion and how would you change the world through that passion?
Yeah, because we don't want things just for ourselves, right?
Yeah.
We want people to come to our funeral and say nice things about us. What's the legacy?
What is the legacy? So I want to touch on something that I know changed your life in a different way also. So you're a cancer survivor as well. Mm-hmm. Tell me about that journey and how that even further made you into the Bruce you are today.
Yeah. So I thought my life was golden, you know, because shortly after, you know, about 5 years later, so it was probably 2009, 2010, where this guy approached me about being his life coach. And I started doing that. I started writing again. I continued to run. I was really feeling good about who I was. I now loved being a dad. The marriage still had issues and was coming to an end anyway. And there was a traumatic event that happened in our lives, in my family, that caused that to be accelerated. But I thought my life, once we got through that, I thought my life was golden. It was going exactly where I wanted it to go. And on February 17th in 2013, my doctor called me. I had just turned 50 years old, and my doctor called me and when your doctor calls and he's fighting back tears, you know that's not good news. And I had had some tests done. And he said, Bruce, I have no idea how to tell you this, but you've got stage 4 prostate cancer. And we've got to do something very, very quick. Just as you know, Mama, breast cancer is very, very treatable.
Yes, it is.
And it's caught early.
Early, yep.
But when it's not caught early, you have to take drastic actions. And so they're just like prostate cancer is the same thing. It's, you know, it's very treatable, lots of options. I didn't have any option but surgery at this point in order to save my life. And my doctor who does these surgeries, he said, Bruce, you're a young man, you know, 50 years old is almost unheard of, just like you when you got it in your early 30s.
Yep.
you know, but my surgeon said, I don't want to touch you. I can do the surgery, but I don't want to do it. I want to try to connect you with this guy who's the best. And he happens to be here in Richmond. People fly from all over the country to come here to have prostate surgery from Dr. Morgan. And Dr. Morgan wasn't able to see me until September. And my doctor said, Bruce, you don't have until September. So let me see what I can do. I play golf with him. I'll just call him at home. And so nevertheless, I had my surgery on April 7th. Of 2014, the dates all run together to 2014 now. I'm 2.5 years out.
So congratulations.
Thank you. And the surgery was supposed to be, you know, fairly routine, in as much as radical retropubic prostatectomy can be, you know, routine.
Right.
But in his world, it was going to be about an hour and a half surgery, a night, possibly two nights in the hospital, then, you know, follow up with maybe some radiation treatment and things like that. And when I woke up later that morning and realized that there was a lot more equipment and a lot more people with very worried faces on them, I realized something had not gone right. And the 1.5 hour surgery wound up being a 5 hour surgery, during which there were major complications and I lost 70% of my blood on the operating table. They lost my heartbeat for a little while, but they were able to resuscitate me.
So your life's a miracle, Bruce.
It is a miracle.
Tell me about the phrase in your book. You mentioned a phrase you said to yourself over and over again as you went through each moment of pain and recovery. What is that phrase? And tell me what it meant to you.
The backstory there, and I know we need to move quickly through that.
Yeah, we've been talking for almost 45 minutes.
Okay.
We have to have a part two, because this is just, I enjoy a conversation and I want more.
Okay. Yeah. So one of the things that they can't give you when you've lost that much blood is painkillers. So I had to do radical abdominal surgery with no pain medication post-surgery. So I was in so much pain that all I could literally do was take one breath at a time. I'd breathe in, I'd breathe out, and I would say, okay, Bruce, you took a breath. You didn't die. Let's do another one. I wouldn't string them together or count how many breaths I was able to take. I wouldn't, you know, figure out how many more breaths I would try to take in the next 20 minutes. I just treated each breath as a unique event. Something happened to me when I was doing that. Again, I had another epiphany similar to when I was out running. It occurred to me that if I could take a breath, breathe in, breathe out, then at that moment, Mema, I have everything I need. Because we talk about needs, and you know, Abraham Maslow came up with this beautiful hierarchy of needs. Mm-hmm. It's all bogus. You know, those are hierarchies of wants, ultimately. And so what it occurred to me was that if I can hear the beeping and the buzzing of the equipment around me, then that's a gift. That's beyond. I don't need to hear to be alive.
Right.
That's a gift. I can smell the antiseptics and the medicines.
Right.
And I can smell the food cart go down.
Your heart's still beating. You're still here.
Yeah. I could smell the food not coming to my room, because it would be a
right.
I could eat solid food. I could see my doctors and nurses. So I had all of these gifts. And another thought occurred to me was that there are people in this world either born with a genetic condition or through an accident of some type, they have absolutely no feeling whatsoever. And I don't know about you, but I like feelings. You know, I like to hold your hand and feel what that feels like. I like to pet my cat, and you know, I like to feel the sun on my skin.
Right.
And so even in the midst of this horrific pain that I'm in, the ability for me to feel that pain is still a gift.
I think that's extremely beautiful. It's beautiful. And again, to tie it into living bliss, you know, people often think that living bliss is jumping and skipping in the, you know, grass with the unicorns. Right. And it's easy and as simple as just kind of being able to just sit in bed and breathe in and breathe out. And I'll tell you, during some of my most challenging times in life, when I'm tired, overwhelmed, stressed out, or just not feeling well, I remember being in treatment for breast cancer and going through chemotherapy. And just like you, I was looking at the calendar of my treatment plan. You know, it was months and months away of treatment. I thought, I can't get through one day. How am I going to get through months of treatment. And so I just began to live in the moment. And what I mean by that is just what you just said, is just get through right now, get through the next minute, then the next minute, then the next minute.
Exactly.
And I think also with the world being so, our world has changed so much. People are so into acquisition of things,
yes,
money, things, stuff, just stuff that doesn't mean anything, when all you need is your breath and your heartbeat.
That's it.
So Bruce, we have 2 minutes left on our call. So you give me so much to deal with. We have to think about and that's inspired me. So we have to have part two. You have to promise me that.
No, I can talk to you for days.
I know. I love it. We have to have wine next time and chocolates while we're talking. Mm-hmm. So before we wrap up, tell me what are the maybe like 3 to 5 ways that you live pure bliss every day?
First and foremost, we just hit it. Gratitude. Gratitude is the secret sauce. You know, we all want something better in our lives, and we live in a world where we hear the term launch a lot. You know, we want to launch a new business. We want to launch a new product. We're going to launch a new career or our life. Well, guess what you have to have in order to launch something? You've got to have a firm launch pad, you know, a firm foundation from which you're standing right now, and you want to jump to propel yourself into the life that you want. So if your life is all bitterness and disappointment and anger and all of these yucky feelings, that's quicksand. And I don't know when the last time it was that you tried to jump out of waist-high quicksand or just muck. You can't jump there.
No.
So gratitude is the most single important thing. Gratitude for what you have right now. Gratitude for the things in your past. One of the things that I've learned how to do is look at the really painful experiences that I've gone through. And I'm not necessarily grateful for the experience itself, like my daughter's death, for example. I'm not grateful that she died. But I look at how has having had that experience made me a better or stronger person.
That's powerful. Yeah. So what's number two?
So gratitude, then having a very clear vision of who it is you want to be. Create, learn how to dream again. If I can get through this, and what would I want to create? What do I want my life to be? What do I want my relationships to be? So rather than just settling for whatever life throws at us, how about we start living proactively, imaginatively, creatively again? So creating a vision for who it is you want to be or what you want to become. So gratitude and vision.
What's the third thing?
And then perseverance. Perseverance to do what you can do today. You know, you can't do what you need to do tomorrow, but today I can think a thought. I can take one little action to move me in the direction of the life I'm trying to live according to my vision and according to the gratitude that I have.
I love that. And that is how Bruce Van Horn lives pure bliss every day. Having gratitude, having a vision, and having perseverance.
Yes.
I love it, Bruce. I've had so much fun talking to you. All that's missing is wine and chocolate, which I'll provide next time on our next podcast. But I'm so happy to have had this wonderful first podcast with you. And I look forward to chatting again and many more of your powerful, beautiful, blissful insights.
Absolutely.
Thank you, Bruce. Talk to you soon.
Very good. Bye-bye.
Okay. Bye-bye. Bruce Van Horn is a speaker, teacher, and coach. He's the author of the bestseller book, Worry No More. Bruce's podcast, Life's a Marathon, is heard by people all around the globe. You can find Bruce on Twitter at BruceVH and on Instagram at Bruce.VanHorn. Have a wonderful, amazing, and blissful day.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the Pure Bliss Show with Mema Carmo. We hope you were inspired by the show. Remember, you're the catalyst that the world has been waiting for. In each moment, live in pure bliss.